You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum, now in our 31st year of continuous political talk. This is an August 15th edition. This race for mayor in the Democratic primary three-way race is becoming extremely heated, quite controversial, with the fact that over $300,000 plus has come from outside sources to support Rahina Romero, the Ward 1 councilperson, trying to hold back this wave of money that's been splashed on these election shores in 2019. Steve Farley has said, well, we're doing the best we can. We've done everything that we can with the money we've had to be able to do it. But I don't know how influential this money can be, but you can't ignore it. Those very seriously opposed to the Rahina Romero campaign for mayor of our town have banded together to form an organization called TotalIntegrity.com. With us is the former state senator, Luis Gonzalez, and our friend Jesse Lugo, who are a part of that effort to stop Rahina Romero. You got involved in this. Why? It's more than just, Rahina, Farley. It's more than that to you.
Certainly, John. Thank you for having us this afternoon. We have been talking for years about the Rahina Romero way of representing our Ward 1. I live in Ward 1. I've lived in Ward 1 for many, many years, more than 20 years. And we follow very closely the decisions that are made. We follow whether an individual is transparent or not. We follow whether what you say to the public you're actually doing behind closed doors. Those are the opposites in this case. And we also follow how they act towards other people whom they say that they support. And we get very, very frustrated by the fact that she says one thing but does another and tries to create illusions that she is all this kind of a progressive candidate when in fact she really isn't. And so it goes back to her decision making, her short-sightedness in those decisions that are made, and how she spins those things that she says she did when she did it, and maybe somebody else did and takes credit for things that she didn't do. And that's a consistent pattern of how she represents the area that she's been representing for the last almost 12 years. And so we've decided that we don't need that kind of leadership in the mayor's office. And that's one of the major, major reasons why we decided that we need to take a stand.
Now, obviously, Jesse, you've been following this, and I've been involved so closely with this community and its politics, but you've decided you needed to be involved in this as well.
Absolutely, John. In fact, I'm going to tell you and your listening audience that 2 years ago, I was recruiting Councilmember Richard Fimbres to run for mayor. If he would accept it to do so, Luis and I would not be here.
We wouldn't be having this conversation, would we?
I would be very confident that our next mayor would have been Councilmember Richard Fimbres.
I absolutely would have been on that wagon.
But the other note, John, the reason why when I heard Luis talk on your show and talking about individual candidates running for public office, certainly you look at individuals, the past, what they've done, based on qualification, irregardless to race, gender, or creed. So this, as an example, is you're looking at the candidate that most likely that would be the best qualified to represent the issues facing the city of Tucson. But the one issue that I am aware of, back in 2010, John, as you recall, Proposition 400, which was a city initiative for voters to approve funding, had failed. Shortly after that, we had Proposition 409. But on that Proposition 409, it was more detailed of the commitment how the funds were going to be used, especially for roadways, establishing a committee to oversee those funds. And Proposition 409 was very successful because out of the $100 million dedicated funds, $90 million went to major arterials, $10 million for neighborhood streets. But when you crunch the numbers, $10 million in 5 years, it only came up to $500,000 per ward. So it was peanuts.
Yeah.
Then the good news about Proposition 409, all the issues that were identified in that proposition, they were delivered on time and below budget. And the reason why it passed below budget, because the decline of crude oil, which allowed then the city then to receive better bids on their programs. But then Proposition 101 came up, and I believe that because of the success of Proposition 409 and the commissioners that were set on, assigned to make sure that the funds be only utilized as the voters approve, I believe that 101 did pass. Then, of course, then first responders, the issues were tagged onto it. And today now, Proposition 401 now funds $40 million for neighborhood streets and $60 million for major arterials. But the one issue that I want to make sure that we're clear, John, back in 2007, 8, and 9, when Proposition 400 failed, and this is based on the propaganda of the city of Tucson, and what it says that because of declining revenues, that mayor and council, and Councilmember Romero was part of that group at that time, where the city of Tucson suspended a residential street paving and reduced roadway maintenance, but also to eliminate funding for more than 130 vacant police positions, and also deferred infrastructure replacement and maintenance of streets, facilities, vehicles, and equipment. Now that in itself, understanding that core service is mandated by the city charter, you have a fiduciary responsibility, mayor and council, to make sure you adhere to that. In this particular case, where you have 2007, 8, and 9, city didn't do nothing, but yet the deterioration of our streets has led to now where in order for the city of Tucson to conduct maintenance on just on neighborhood streets, the funds that are needed is $650 million.
Wow. That's a considerable amount of money, obviously.
Well, John, I believe that unless there's a creative way of funding, in fact, on the council member's Romero's website, she indicates that she wants to establish a mayor's task force to identify long-term dedicated revenue for road construction. That is the mayor and council responsibility. They have internal documents to make sure that happens. When you set up an ad hoc committee, what do they know about the total revenues and expense for the city of Tucson? I said, I can tell you one thing, depending on who gets elected mayor. I have a funding mechanism that will work, but I'll wait till after the election.
All right. Senator.
Well, look, it's very interesting what's going on here over the years. In relationship to the issue that Jesse just talked about, people seem to wait until election time to start showing that they're doing something. If you look out in the West Side, Ward 1 in particular, where the paving of streets has been in the last 3 months, West Speedway. West Speedway, all the way out to Peyton Hills, has been completely redone, paved, looks very pretty, very beautiful. And guess what? You turn right on Painted Hills, and you're in Regina Romero's home. So what is going on here? You know, the same thing on 22nd Street, West 22nd Street. The same thing went on. They started working on that road, started paving it, making it look nice, all the way down to Greasewood. Greasewood is another major corridor for Regina to go on home
in Painted Hills
when she's coming back from wherever she's at some function somewhere, and go straight down to Speedway, and then takes a left on Speedway and a right on Painted Hills, and she's home. So what does it tell you? What does it tell you? That an election year, it's okay to go out and take monies from wherever and find the money and pave my own way home.
You know, this idea, too, about leadership. I believe that Steve Farley has shown his willingness to work with the business community. I'm not so sure that Rahina Romero even knows how to work with the business community. You go back to that Grand Canyon University proposal. One day she's for it, the next day she's opposed to it. And then it just absolutely became a debacle. And far from consideration, which if in fact they were considering it, we ought to have at least had a direct look at what they were offering us. And it failed. We don't have it. It could have been, I think, a great boon for the West Side, whether people wanted that or not, with El Real golf course. But we never had a chance because she never gave us a chance. She was the point person on the Grand Canyon University proposal, and it just died because of her, in my opinion.
Well, that was a total fiasco.
It really was.
And like I've said before, it doesn't matter what side you were on. What you look at is how your elected official acted on that issue.
It's bizarre.
And whether she was for it today and against it tomorrow,
right,
and for it again the next day and against it the following day,
right,
that is a sign of poor leadership. It doesn't matter what would have happened in that sense. But when you sit there and you lie to your own constituencies about what it is, where you're going, and what the plan is, John, that is not leadership. Far from it. Look, what's going on right now with all these illusions that she's put together about how progressive she is and attracted all of these outside dollars coming in, hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on this campaign on her behalf. This makes a mockery out of the clean election system. For a person like this to say continuously, I'm a clean elections candidate, I don't take PAC money, I don't take corporate money, I don't take any money from outside interests, I only take the public's money. Well, let me tell you, she's made it into a pure joke. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that what's going to happen now is just going to set a precedent for what happens in the following elections as it comes to outside money being influenced to come in here and start buying elections.
I've never seen numbers like this in a city election. I mean, 300,000 plus just in this primary for her. For her, I mean, that's an enormous amount of money in a race like this. And it could have a great influence on it. And may, for that matter. Jesse?
Yeah, one of the other things, John, that I look at is, you know, of course, you have the, I call them letterhead trustees. These are the individuals that have endorsed a candidate, and I don't believe it carries much merit. But one of the things I did look is, if you look at this list, John, of all these entities that support publicly Romero, what is missing is the neighborhoods. You got Barrio Anita, Barrio Hollywood, Silvercroft, El Rio, Menlo Park, Barrio Viejo. Where are they at? But most important, you have first responders, Tucson Police Firefighters Association, Tucson Police Officer Association, and Tucson Firefighters Association. After 12 years, you would believe that they would be supporting her candidacy as mayor, but they're not.
No, they're not. They're supporting Steve Farley's candidacy for mayor. You know, I've known both of these individuals for a great length of time. Both have served about the same length of time in public office. 12 years for Rahina Romero in the Ward 1 council seat. And then, of course, 12 years, 6 in the House, 6 in the Senate, for Steve Farley. The idea that Steve Farley wasn't just simply centered on what was happening in the legislature. He was centered on what happened here. I remember him supporting him and doing live broadcasts. I think I did 10 of them. When he wanted to extend the streetcar out north through the Broadway corridor and couldn't get any funding for it, went back to the business community and tried to rebuild relationships with the business community so that the next time we had a rail service for downtown that came up, we could get it passed, and we did, and we got the federal money, and it's made a huge difference downtown, Senator. A huge difference. I mean, who has made a difference downtown? It's been Steve Farley.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone knows that follows that process about the the trolley coming here and all that. We know who was involved in that more than anybody else. Of course, it was Mr. Farley. You know, Total Integrity hasn't made any endorsements. We have deliberately stayed away from making an endorsement. And one of the reasons, of course, is because we don't want to have any collaboration whatsoever with any of the campaigns that are running for mayor in this case. Because we've taken a position that I know is somewhat controversial. Some say it's a little bit divisive. But like I have said before, you know, we have to take a position at some point. We have to stand up and be accountable at some point. We can't just acquiesce and stay on the side and be quiet and not say anything about what's really going on in our communities. And that's a major reason why I'm involved in this, because I'm sick and tired of it. I'm sick and tired of having to put up with representation that just simply isn't what I believe to be and what the people that I work with to be individuals that have the moral compass to be able to represent their constituents well.
How much of a player in this is Raul Grijalva, our longtime congressman, who employs Regina Romero's husband as his chief of staff? How much of a player in this is he? Did he pick up the phone, ask for some third-party money to come Regina's way, or not? Or do you have any idea?
Well, I don't know, John, what the congressman is doing in behalf of this candidate. I don't pay much attention to that. We are focused on what we do. However, if you look at the last, say, 10 elections where Mr. Grijalva has come out and endorsed his candidates in primaries, all of them have lost. So I question how much of a coattail effect he has.
Really? Hasn't had a winner yet, huh?
Not yet.
Jesse.
Well, the other thing, John, is, again, the reason why we're here, let's say we would like, on talk radio, you know, for decades, John, there have been individual candidates that, well, elected officials that have been opposed by the business community and people that call in on talk radio. Now is the time to energize. If you believe that Romero should not be your next mayor, please go to nomoreromero.com, make your contribution, because Luis Gonzalez cannot execute Total Integrity plan in order to make sure that the accurate information gets disseminated to the voters. One thing, John, is like Luis and I, you know, it's almost like deja vu. It's almost what we used to do with the Tucson Business Coalition back in 1990. This is exactly what TBC was founded under those conditions, where we challenge authority. We challenge those individuals that would oppose measures to assure that Tucson became progressive. But one thing that has not changed, John, is the boys and girls of summer. These are the big heavy hitters that will stroke out a check and they leave for the summer. Rest assured, they won't be back till September, and they'll probably say, well, I didn't know. But tell you what, shame on them. Because if the election result does not occur as to what we hope it's not, then they have nobody to blame but themselves. But one thing that what Luis and I understand is West Side politics. There's something that a lot of people don't know. We call it the underbelly politics. Luis and I can tell you stories, John, that will probably make your hair stand up. I said, and nor do we complain if somebody says that somebody's doing a negative campaign. If what Luis is posting and trying to share with individuals that will vote, this is a truth based on track record by Councilmember Romero for 12 years. I said, maybe she ought to say, I would have, I could have, I should have, but she hasn't.
Robert is in our caller, and then we have Bobby. Robert, welcome to the John C. Scott Show. With Jesse Lugo and former Senator Luis Gonzalez. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thank you. Enjoy your show. I'd like to ask the two gentlemen, what does Total Integrity stand for? And I hear a lot of people talk about what the problems are in Tucson all the time. But what have you guys done to make Tucson a better place to live? What have you guys done to improve the West Side yourself? Because I hear people complain about it, and I never hear any solutions on the radio.
Senator, go ahead.
Well, Robert, we're doing it right now. I'm going to tell you what. If we're successful in defeating Romero, I think we've done a great service for this community. With that, you know, I can tell you all about that. I've been involved in this community, in my community, for the last 40 years. And if you take a look at the record, you'll find out that I've always been on the side of the community itself and not special interests. So, you know, it's difficult to answer a question like that to someone who already has his own answer and his own agenda. Thanks.
Robert, thank you so much. And let's go to Bobby on our phone lines. Bobby, welcome to the John C. Scott Show. You're with former State Senator Luis Gonzalez and Jesse Lugo. Go ahead. Bobby.
Hey, Don. First of all, I'd like to say I really enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I'm a new listener.
Thank you.
I'd also like to say that I'm a Chicano. I'm Mexican-American, and I'm proud to be Mexican-American. And I don't think it's any coincidence that we have two Chicanos who are attacking a strong Latina. That just shows the toxic machismo that they both have against the Latina that is the only Latina that's in the race.
Well, again, this is not about
gender.
Gender, race, or creed. It's based on qualifications on a candidate, irregardless whether you're Hispanic or not, what have you on it. And so what we're asking for the public is based on the information that you see on these candidates, then you make the determination and then vote for the candidate that you believe will be the most qualified person to lead the city of Tucson.
Who do you support for mayor?
I have not made a decision, nor we have as part of the Total Integrity at this time.
I think, you know, when we look at the race, we've got two white people. We've got a male and we've got a female. And the only Latina, the woman of color, is the only one who's being attacked in this race. I don't think it's any coincidence.
An attack normally is if somebody doesn't tell the truth. But if you go to nomoreromero.com, look at the information and see if there's anything there that is not true. If it's true, then how can you classify it as negative?
All right, Bobby, thank you. Thanks for your call. I appreciate you listening as well. Well, Jesse, appreciate you being on the show. And Senator, thanks for being here. I think there's a clear difference between the candidate I support, which is Steve Farley, and Raheena Romero. I know you're opposed to Raheena because of her lack of, I think, transparency and hard work for Ward 1. I'm sure that's why you're involved.
Certainly, and if Bobby is still listening, look, I've been involved in the political arena here for many, many years. I've served in the state legislature. I served for an educational institution. And my mentors were people like Hector Morales, who was one of the icons of our community. And one of the things that Hector used to say, that we as a people, and you talk about the Chicano people in this community, will never progress until we're ready to take on one of our own that doesn't represent us properly, efficiently, and effectively. And I think that's something that's happening here that you're seeing here, that we're not taking a position that just because a person is Chicano or Hispanic or whatever else you want to call yourself, that you ought to be supported by the community if you haven't produced we expect a production to be for the constituency that she supposedly represents.
All right, how do you join your effort if people want to be a part of TotalIntegrity.com? What do they do?
You can go to nomoreromero.com. That'll take you directly to our website. We're now at the point in time where we're really trying to close out our campaign in the next 10 days. Election, as you know, is 11 days from today. We're trying to raise the amount of money that we need to close it out. And we're not relenting on it. We're continuing to raise funds. If your listeners believe in what we believe and they think that we have some good reasons to oppose this candidacy, please go to nomoreromero.com and contribute a few dollars. Any amount that you contribute will be much appreciated.
Senator, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Former State Senator Luis Gonzalez and Jesse Lugo, our great friend. Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
This part of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call Mike Emery at 323-8650. I'm John C. Scott, and I haven't recommended an auto repair place for a long time since Jesse Lugo had his repair place. That's been a while back on Speedway. But Mike Emery is the kind of person I recommend who is an honest guy that will repair your car honestly. And Mike Emery is fair. He has a professional group of people that are all ASE certified. And there are hundreds of options that you have when it comes to the repair of your car in our town. But each person that works for Mike Emery not only stands for honesty and integrity, but for repairing your car right the very first time. I'm proud to recommend Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You can call him at 323-8650. I'm John C. Scott, and I trust Mike Emery for the repair of our family car. You can, too. Back in a moment after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Show. Caught between opposing views of President Trump and the Democratic leaders, Israeli's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has reversed himself on Thursday, decided to prohibit the congressional representatives, Omar from Minnesota and Tahib from Michigan, from visiting Israel during a trip scheduled to start on Sunday. The move followed an unusual intervention by Trump and immediately opened up a new battle between Netanyahu and the Democrats, who have privately warned that such a decision would be unprecedented and inconsistent with Israel's claim of tolerance and openness. The decision has been made. The decision is not to allow them to enter, so says the Israeli deputy foreign minister, as well as the office of Benjamin Netanyahu. David Wells is with the Grand Canyon Institute. He's aware of these international stories that are before us today, and I wish that he would have an opinion. In fact, I think he does. Let's go to David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute. Almost unprecedented for a president of the United States saying, do not welcome two of our congressmen, our congresswomen, to your country. And then, obviously, Netanyahu says, well, we weren't going to anyway. So, I mean, just amazing. Amazing, David.
Yeah, and it's really quite disturbing because he's also the first two Muslim women ever elected to Congress. So he's... that there's something other, you know, distinction about them besides the fact, of course, that they've been critical of Israel's governmental policies. Now, this is a really disturbing, and a lot of the Democrats, including AIPAC, by the way, the American-Israel Political Action Committee, has been critical of this. So a lot of folks who actually, like Jerry Nadler and so forth, who have been very critical of the stances that Ilhan Omar and Tlaib have taken relative to Israel have been much more critical this time around about Israel's policies here. And I think there could be a real long-term effects here, because essentially Netanyahu's playing into our political partisan games again, and that's not in Israel's best interest long run.
Well, you know, our show, the John C. Scott Show, was broadcast 3 times from Israel. We were over there 2 and 3 weeks at a time. Everything from the cassette to the Golan Heights all over to the Red Sea. And we were in Gaza before it was turned over to the Palestinians. The Knesset is a wonderful place. We've interviewed numerous people there. I don't pretend to know in any way, shape, or form the insides of Israeli politics. I do know, I always believe that peace died with Rabin, and that Netanyahu was never going to take Israel on a path toward a two-state solution. Is there any other solution, David Wells, to the continued war between the Palestinians and the Israelis? Is there any other possibility other than a two-state solution, which is being eroded every time there's a new house built in the settlements?
Yeah, and that's essentially been that erosion has been going on for decades now. It's certainly they've continued that in a more direct manner, but it's been going on for quite a while. I mean, that makes essentially the two-state solution increasingly impossible, because essentially if you actually look at the West Bank, it's like got all these little carve-out things, and again, all the more the best territory, best water supplies, Israel's trying to take that. I mean, this is a country that has really water issues as well going forward. There's a report out recently about water issues, and Israel is one of the countries most at risk about water issues. So they've been taking water rights away from Palestinians and so forth. So it makes it really hard to imagine that we'd have some kind of contiguous Palestinian state. And on top of that, of course, you've got the issues related to East Jerusalem that essentially Israel has annexed against the world community's perspective. So you got lots of complications, and Netanyahu, you know, doesn't have any, seem to have any interest in that. They seem to sort of want to make the Palestinians essentially go away. I'm not quite sure where that goes, because the other option is a one-state solution, and a lot of folks in Israel are very uncomfortable about that, which is, I think, a big reason why they're so upset about the leaders of the BDS movement, who are more advocations of the one-state solution, because that would eliminate Israel as a Jewish state, but it would make it Israel a multicultural, multi-religious state in a much more holistic way than it is now. But that would mean that the Palestinians would be treated as equals to the Jews in Israel, and that's not anywhere close to where they're at now. There's not a road to that at all. And then the third one is to essentially continue to move on an apartheid map, which is essentially, you know, where the Palestinians are continually to push to the very boundaries of existence. And again, there's some thoughts that Netanyahu might even begin to do what the right wing of Israel wants to do. I mean, he's on the right wing, but even the extreme right wing, which is to be to actually annex parts of the West Bank and bring it in to Israel proper, like they've done with East Jerusalem. I mean, I think that's the general way that they're gradually going to try to take over the entire territory unless things change. And the U.S. has a possibility to create leverage there, because we do provide over $3 billion in aid to Israel, more than any other country in the world. But the U.S. has to be willing to use that leverage. Trump certainly won't do that.
You know, it surprises me that a great many Jews that I know, my wife is Jewish, and others, that just simply confuse my anti-Netanyahu feelings with anti-Semitism, which are completely different, I might add. You know, I think Netanyahu is a bully. I think he's a racist. There's no question about that. I think he is an individual that literally has no other interest whatsoever of trying to bring about a solution toward peace in Israel, and we'll never get there with him as a leader. And he's actually aligned himself with some really hateful people in Israel. And that is one of the reasons why I just don't back Netanyahu at all. And I think a great many people in this country don't. But they're caught with him as they are with Donald Trump. What was your take on Trump getting involved in this?
Well, in some ways, it's not surprising, since it's not the first time he's gotten involved in things related to Israel. And we know how much he loves these two congresswomen.
He
essentially wants to make them the caricature for the Democratic Party. That's not, you know, too surprising. But it's really disappointing because the Democrats, like Steny Hoyer, just led, who's the among the leadership on the Democratic House side from Maryland, had just led a delegation of 41. Congress people to Israel. Of course, they didn't spend much time talking to Palestinians, but it was a bipartisan group and so forth. And he was really careful to work with Israeli government and their foreign minister to make sure that these two congresswomen were going to be allowed to enter Israel. And they had been told that that was going to happen. And then to have that rescinded like this, they lose a lot of credibility. And, you know, this is on top of all the other things where Netanyahu came and, you know, addressed the joint session of Congress when Obama was president, things like that, where it's increasingly, because young people are not, older folks are much more pro-Israel than younger folks are, and younger folks don't have the same sense of connection that that a number of older folks do, and they see the issues that the Palestinians are as a big human rights issue, and they are going to be much more resistant to Israel long term because of moves like this, because of it's simply not consistent with the way we think a democracy or a democratic republic ought to be functioning.
Well, there's no question that the United States was involved in the Israeli election, certainly by money being pumped into that election from many people in this country, and also because of President Trump's support of Netanyahu in his bid to become prime minister once more. Of course, he's very possibly under indictment. His wife, Netanyahu's wife, apparently has been indicted on criminal charges. I mean, this is a fairly corrupt family here that's been running this country for a long period of time. And I don't know whether they'll ever be held account, accountable for what money has been stolen from the public of Israel. But it's there to, obviously, I would assume, hopefully, urge people to ask questions about this government. And I don't know whether they do or not, but they should.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be very interesting. Israel's going to have another election on September 17th. And, you know, Netanyahu's base has been essentially sort of dwindling. And so it's, as a consequence, he's been aligning, as you noted, with these extremely right, extremely racist parties. And so his political futures, it's going to be really interesting to see how that election came out. I mean, he technically won the last election, but wasn't able to form a governing coalition because they have a parliamentary system there. And his party doesn't get, you have to work with other parties to create a majority. So it's not really clear. Let's just see what happens there. I mean, there's not a lot of sentiment within Israel proper right now to really push for a peace solution. This is something that hasn't really been on the front burner in Israel. It's been a really, you know, they've largely focused on in terms of their human rights as a security issue. And a lot of Israeli citizens have pretty racist views toward Arabs. And that's, which has been shown in some polls there. So a lot of issues that are going on internally that make it more difficult also to have real progress on it. That's where you need to have leadership and pressure, I think, on Israel to actually be able to move in a positive way. And you might remember when Obama was leaving office, there was a vote in the UN, and the U.S. did something they almost never do. They abstained from a Security Council resolution. As a consequence, it passed. And there was all kinds of pressure that happened on, you know, criticism of the Obama administration at all. So it's a difficult political task in this country to stand up and say that you're not agreeing with the policies of Israel and willing to, you know, stick your neck out to some degree. And that's really what Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have been doing. And they've been paying the price for that.
I don't recall another country denying a visit by Congress people of the United States. That's a very rare event, isn't it? It seems to be something I can't recall ever happening before. I'm sure it may have, but I don't recall. So
no, I think it's quite rare. And I think, you know, the other thing is, you know, Israel is a country that gets a lot more visits per capita than a lot of them. I'd like to see a lot more of our Congress people going down to Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador than having a big visit to Israel. But we're not, I think some of our, it would be nicer to, you know, refocus those things. But yeah, no, we had, I mean, because I said there's 41 Congress people. I mean, that's, you know, about a tenth of them already just went to Israel on a visit. We don't see that too often. So they get Israel gets a lot of attention. And it's also essentially a PR campaign by Israel to make sure that they stay in good stead and with the people who are in our Congress.
Well, and they're treated pretty well. You get the Hotel David, which is a very expensive hotel, even worldwide, and you eat very well, and you're treated very well, and it's a great PR effort on the part of the Israelis. I don't know whether this is ever going to be balanced out or not. I really don't. I see it deteriorating into a one-state solution, which doesn't seem to me to be a solution at all. Is it? It isn't, David, is it?
No, I mean, it's really disappointing because I can remember the first Intifada in the 1980s, which was a time when I first became sort of more aware of what was going on at that time and the hopes that that would lead to something more promising. And here we are 30 years later, and the situation there really hasn't gotten any better and in many ways is worse. In some ways, it is a little bit better, but really not making the kind of movement forward that you'd expect that might have occurred. And so that's really, you know, fundamentally disappointing. And, you know, and this is a trip that was organized through Hanan Ashrawi, who is one of the women leaders in the Palestinian occupied territories. And you know, and she has a really excellent reputation. I'm a little bit biased in the sense because when I was teaching at Earlham College about 20 years ago, I had her daughter in my class, so I was
good to know the family. I mean, yes.
I think that she has a very strong reputation in terms of standing up for human rights and really pushing things, and so they weren't meeting with, you know, Politico. They were really trying to get more of a feeling on the ground, and the idea that the government of Israel would decide that that's too dangerous for them to allow to happen is really disturbing.
I agree. David, come back with me. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'll rejoin you in just a moment, if you don't mind, please. David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute. after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum, talking about the Israeli government denying entrance of two U.S. congresswomen into Israel. Several pro-Israeli groups in the United States have criticized the decision about the about-face a part of Netanyahu's government. At first he said yes, they can come, and now it's no, they can't. Any sitting member of Congress should be welcome to visit Israel as an official representative of the Israeli closest ally and most critical source of international support, says the Israel Policy Forum, New York-based Jewish organization. We strongly urge the Prime Minister Netanyahu to reconsider, although he has not. We're talking with David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute about this rather international craziness, I guess you could call it. Let's talk a little bit about how the left and the right are treating this in this country. What do you think as far as the way the conservatives are thinking about this and the way the progressives are, David?
Well, generally on the Democratic side, you're, again, including people who have been very staunch backers of Israel, you're seeing roundabout strong criticisms of Netanyahu and the government of Israel for making this decision. And again, also from strong supporting groups like AIPAC that are critical of the decision. You're hearing crickets on the Republican side. Well, except to the degree Martha McSally managed to get herself on Fox. I don't know how, but she tweeted it out afterwards. And she was proclaiming her love for Israel and the right of Israel to decide who can come in her in their country or not. And being quite critical of these congresswomen. So in that sense, she's been willing to speak out about it. But for the most part, the rest of the Republicans have been pretty quiet.
Let's go to our telephones, and Timo is on our lines. Welcome to the show. You're with David Wells at the Grand Canyon Institute. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So you have all these right-wing commentators that are on AM talk radio, like Mark Levin and Savage and, you know, Ben Shapiro and stuff, and they all obviously support Israel. But what I find kind of confusing is that you have on the left people like Zuckerberg and CEOs of CNN and MSNBC and a lot of left-wing media are also Jewish. And my question is there a conflict between between Israel and Jewish, American Jewish media, or are they on the same team?
Go ahead, David Wells. Conflict between some of the more successful Jewish billionaires in our country and the Israeli government.
I think for a lot of progressive Jews and liberal Jews, they have a really hard time on the issue related to Israel because they feel very tied to Israel, related to reason of its founding after the Holocaust and World War II, and feel a close kinship to the reason for Israel's existence. But on the flip side, these are people also are very concerned about human rights issues and so forth. And so they have a really hard time, I think, dealing with the issues of the way the Israeli government is treating that. And I have a colleague who's Jewish, and we go back and forth on this a few times. And for her, you can make criticisms of Hamas and of the PLO and so forth. And for her, that she sees negative things on both sides. What I see as a huge power differential. You know, one side has a nuclear weapon and the best military in the world and $3 billion in U.S. aid coming in, and the other doesn't. So, but anyway, I do think, a lot of Jews feel very conflicted about this. And then there's this term called self-hating Jews that's often applied to Jews who stick out and say that they stand up for Palestinian rights, which there are, there's Jews for Peace and there are groups like that, but they're relatively small. Israel sort of has a special place in sort of the third rail of American politics, where if you, it's difficult to cross that. And that's where a lot of the progressive Jews are, in my opinion.
Me, Timo, answer your question, I hope.
Yeah, thanks. It's just it's confusing for me because I was born and raised evangelical, and now I'm married to a Palestinian Christian. So it's interesting. But yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, David, this isn't going to go away soon. I mean, this goes on and on and on. I don't see a solution whatsoever on the table as long as Donald Trump is president. I just don't see that. I don't think that's going to happen. And as long as it's not going to happen, then that's going to be a powder keg. And it's always going to be a threat of violence on any given moment. And we've seen that happen over and over and over again, over and over and again, which is just a terrible tragedy. David, thanks for being with us. We really, truly appreciate it. Any final comment on this?
I just say that the U.S. has the ability to put more leverage on Israel because of the amount of aid we give them. And certainly that was something I think the Obama administration did a little bit and got a lot of pushback for. But we won't hear a lot of more talking about it because it's sort of a difficult topic for the Democrats to talk about. But we'll see. And certainly Trump's not going to do anything with it because Trump's made it pretty clear where he stands on this issue.
I agree. David, thanks for being with us. Appreciate the conversation. Thanks. We'll have this again soon. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm glad to join you today.
David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute. It's not a progressive. He said, no, it's a centrist. A think tank in America, a very effective one, I might add. This portion of the John C. Scott Show, brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You can call Mike Emery at 323-8650. I'm John C. Scott. I've been telling you that I recommend Perfection Auto Works for the repair of your car. I'm very proud to do so because Mike Emery is an honest mechanic, a fair mechanic, and a professional. And these are the people that you ought to rely on to fix your car. Perfection Auto Works, 1046 North Beverly. Call them at 323-8650. I want to thank the people that made this show interesting today. Jim Nensel, editor of the Weekly. David Safir, the education writer of the Weekly. Steve Lynn, a member of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, about the mayor's race in Tucson, Arizona, and how important it is to everybody. Jesse Lugo was with us, along with former state senator Luis Gonzalez. They opposed Regina Romero in her bid to become the Democratic nominee for mayor. And then David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute's comments on Israel denying access and entrance for two U.S. sitting congresswomen. We'll be back tomorrow over this backyard fence talking the politics of Southern Arizona. Hope you will join us. This has been the John C. Scott Show at KVOI The Voice. Stay tuned next for the best local sports talk show in America. Steve Rivera's Eye on the Ball. Coming up on The Voice, trusted news and talk. Trusted local news and talk. It's KVOI.com.